Okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 115 of Shutters Inc., the episode you thought you were never going to hear. People, we are back. Although we're not quite back the way we used to be. At this point in time, I have Shelton on the phone. How are you, mate?
I'm sorry, who are you and why have you called me?
The last week just took forever, didn't it?
Yes, it sure did.
It felt like
it's
7 months.
It's nice to be back. It's nice to be back, even though we can't quite get our headphone sets and Skype working, but so I'm just on the phone. We can make this sound like one of those really official sort of celebrity phone calls.
That's
that
right.
The interview with. I don't know which one of us is the celebrity, though. But it's nice to be back.
Absolutely.
And the good news is, of course, that we can't either. We've discussed this, you and me, and we can't see any reason why we won't be doing this more regularly now.
Not now. No, we think we've got things sorted.
Yes. Which is really great. So I hope everybody still remembers who we are and the fact that we're here to help them with their photography, all right?
Absolutely. So, in 5 minutes or less, give us a rundown of what's happened in the Shelton world in the last 7 months.
Well, I've been doing a lot of workshops, which I really enjoy and really love to do. I found the rewards of teaching, my style of teaching photography particularly, which I try to keep as simple and as principle-based as possible, has really helped a lot of people, and that's very rewarding for me. I mean, look, the check at the end of the day is great, and essentially that's why you do things in terms of, the business aspect of why you work as a photographer or you run a workshop or you do whatever you do.
Sure.
But to see the little lights come on in people's eyes when you just explain a basic technique, and then they start taking photographs that they've only ever seen other people take.
Yeah.
And then they look at the back of their camera and they go, whoa, oh, that's.
Yeah.
And that is extremely rewarding for me.
Absolutely.
I really love that.
Yeah. I must say, I get the same kind of buzz when I get emails back from people, who ask me audio questions.
Yes.
And I experience pretty much the same kind of thing where you just see the lights going on for them and...
It is. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really, really great. And I wish, I must admit, that I had someone in my life when I was a younger man to do that for me.
Jeez,
and,
that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, yes. I think they'd only just invented the daguerreotype back then. But there were workshops, but the industry was very difficult, at least in Australia back then.
Yeah.
And I would suggest in the United States, to a degree, it's still much the same from what I'm told, and that is that people were very, very keen to keep the information to themselves. And then the advent of the digital era changed things. People became very interested in, all sorts of arenas of photography, but because of digital... There was this misunderstanding that if you bought a digital camera, you'd immediately be able to go out and take great pictures because you can see what you're getting on the back of the screen and, all those kinds of silly ideas.
Yeah.
Whereas photography and the principles haven't really changed at all. So I get a lot of people coming up to, coming on the workshops now who had that hope. They bought a digital SLR and they had that hope, but then they realized, no, I've got to learn this.
Yeah.
In my younger days when I started out as a professional... there weren't, that I recall anyway, that many workshops around that were practical, that enabled you to, learn. And, of course, you wouldn't have known anyway because it was a film thing and you wouldn't have known there on the day whether you'd learned anything or not.
Yeah, right.
The great thing about running a workshop now is that people bring their digital cameras. You've got a model there. You set her up in the light and you talk about exposure and metering and all those kinds of things. They take their photographs and they know right there and then that they've learned something. They've got the photograph in the bag, and that whenever they are in this situation again, or they want to create a situation of this kind, they'll know how to do it.
Yeah.
And that's really rewarding. Very, very rewarding. So we're going to be doing a lot more of that this year.
Yep.
Workshops.
You're doing more workshops, yep.
Yes, absolutely. We are working out also to do a road show around Australia.
Wow.
With, Yeah. Camera House is organising it, and we've yet to confirm the dates.
Yep.
But from what I'm led to believe, I'm definitely on the itinerary, and the other two photographers that are going to be, you know, highlighted are Darren Leal and Ken Duncan. Ken Duncan is very well known in this country for doing beautiful panorama landscapes.
Yep.
And Darren Leal, who's a gentleman of a guy, a really good friend of mine, is an awesome photographer. Very self-deprecating, but awesome photographer, who does beautiful travel work and runs some of the most incredible travel tours, photography tours that are around.
Awesome.
So, yeah, it was quite a, it's going to be quite an interesting thing. I'm really looking forward to it.
Wow.
And of course, I don't know, did I tell you, have we done a podcast about my Patagonia trip?
I don't know that we, When was that?
That was early November.
No, because the last episode that we published of Shutters Inc. was in September. I think you and I sat down to actually record after you got back from Patagonia, but we had all sorts of technical issues, and
that's right.
So we never got it out the door.
That's absolutely right.
So, mate, tell us about Patagonia.
Well,
for a start, where the hell on the globe is Patagonia?
Patagonia is at the very bottom tip of South America.
Oh, okay.
It's a very cold place, and Patagonia is a mountainous region that basically runs between Chile and Argentina.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you've heard of mountains like Mount Fitzroy, Cerro Torre, you know, those and Torres del Paine, those sort of three mountain groups,
right,
which are very well known to landscape photographers, etc., are in the Patagonia region of Argentina and Chile, way down the bottom there of the tip of South America.
Hence why it looked as cold as it did.
Yeah. I sent you some photographs, didn't I?
I saw them on 5 Minute Photographer, and
that's right.
Yeah, around and about.
It was very cold, and it was probably the most arduous photo tour I've ever run.
Wow. Why?
Yeah,
because of the climate?
Which was unpredictable. Very unpredictable.
Bit like
the
Melbourne.
Mountain weather is, you don't know from 1 minute to the next.
You missed that.
Yeah.
I said a bit like Melbourne.
a bit like Melbourne, except more extreme. So head out in the morning, we'd get up in the morning. It fell to me every morning to wake up at 4:30,
right,
stick my head out of the tent, because we were camping.
Yep.
And if I could see stars in the sky, it meant we all had to get out and get ready for a sunrise over one of the mountain ranges.
Right.
So I must admit, there were some mornings where, A, I didn't need the alarm because I was already awake. It was so cold and we were so uncomfortable.
Oh, God.
There's not a lot you can really do about it, you know.
No.
It's
not exactly a Paddy Palin just around the corner that you can go and buy a bigger sleeping bag.
Oh, gee, I wish there would have been. and of course, you know, you're in the same clothes you've been wearing for 5 days, and you know, you're feeling a bit ripe and looking at it and smelling it too.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in the morning it's cold, but you'd stick your head out if there were stars, and it fell to me, like I said, to get everybody out, you know, rattle their tents and wake them up, and then we'd have to hike pretty fast to the mountain that, you know, required our attendance.
Yep.
And take a photograph. But the great thing about it was that we got photographs in bright, clear day, bright, clear weather.
Yep.
Of Cerro Torre at sunrise, which is just, possibly one of the most jaw-dropping things I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
It is just... Well, you've probably seen the photograph that I have on 5 Minute Photographer of that blue mountain range with the orange tip of the... Yeah, well, that's Cerro Torre.
Right.
And it's amazing.
Wow.
And Fitzroy and Torres del Paine, the three main mountain, you know, ranges that... photographers go for. Now, it's very rare that in a short time like we had, which was just a couple of weeks, that you actually get to see all three, because the clouds just permanently sit over these mountains.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you very rarely get to, you might see one or two if you're lucky, but in a short period of time that we had in each of these locations, because you have to move from location to location, so you have only a few days to actually hope to get a picture of one of these mountains. And we were there, and on every single occasion, there was a morning or, you know, an afternoon where everything just cleared up. And
wow.
There was the mountain and you could set it up.
You gotta love that.
Oh, mate, it was absolutely fantastic.
I've got a question about this whole photo tour idea.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm guessing that when you conduct one of these tours, you've got a mixture of people who are, you know, maybe someone like me who doesn't take a bad photograph, who's already got some sort of skills but just wants to take it to the next level. But at the same time, you're also going to have some total newbies who've got no idea. They've got more dollars than cents, so they've come on this photographic tour halfway around the planet to learn how to take a photo. A, how do you deal with the two skill levels? And B, what can you bring to, you know, their photography by being in an exotic location that you couldn't have done by just giving them a workshop at home?
Well, look, both are very good questions to ask. To answer your first one, you have to give individual attention to each person. But of course, those who are there with greater experience require less of your attention because, you know, the reason they've come on a photo tour is because it's all about the photography. They don't have to fight with the tour guide, get back on the bus. You know, they know we're going to be there at the right time, at the right day. They know the whole tour prioritizes photography.
Yeah.
So they're there because this is the best way to get this done, you know?
And they're not going to get taken to some venue where you're told no flash, no tripod, no camera bag.
That's right. Or, okay, we've spent 20 minutes here. Let's get back on the bus. And it's been the worst light of the day. Nobody wants to get out of bed. You know, those kinds of holiday tours where everybody, you know, you get up for breakfast at 9.
Yep.
And you're out looking at the Taj Mahal at 12.
Yep.
No, thank you.
No.
You know, when we go to India later this year in October, I'm intending to be at the Taj Mahal, you know, as early as they'll possibly
let us. 6 in the morning, yeah.
Yeah. So that's why they would come. As for the you know, the neophyte, the newcomer to photography, well, they come because, A, they've always wanted to see this place.
Right.
They are not confident of their photographic skills, but they've always wanted to photograph it, so they know that they're going to have a mentor there who will guide them through each location and each situation so that they maximize their photography, their photographs, and their photographic opportunities and skills.
Yep.
So usually it's the newer ones who require more attention than, you know, the more experienced. And you gather this, you create this level of camaraderie where even some of the more skilled will sometimes, you know, throw their two cents in and help the, you know,
the newer photographers,
help the newer ones as well. Often there's raging debates about techniques and that kind of thing. The bus immediately divides up into Canon and Nikon users. And, you know, there's a whole lot of fun to be had. I was the out of the all of the group, there were only two of us who were Nikon users and the rest were Canon users, so one side of the bus was pretty lopsided, actually. But no, it was great fun. Now the second question, why do they come on a photo tour? Well, yeah, I think that's basically because it's all about the photography, and you know, it's not going to be the wrong time of day in the wrong place.
Yep.
So you know, and they really do work.
I guess the reason I asked that question, because I was listening to you describing these gorgeous mountains and getting up at, you know, the crack of dawn to get the sunrise, and anyone who's done landscape photography at either daybreak or sundown knows that your window of opportunity can be very, very short.
Yes.
And it made me think, you know, how do those newbies go who, you know, don't have the experience, aren't used to going, okay, am I shooting aperture priority or am I going manual? You know, and do I need a graduated ND filter? And, you know, and they don't think about those things quite as quickly as a more experienced photographer would. And do they miss that window of opportunity? And how do you cope with that?
Well, we in the case of, let's say, for instance, Cerro Torre, the morning that we wanted to photograph Cerro Torre, I stuck my head out of the tent, saw the stars, and I just immediately, you know, got everybody out of bed. Let's go. Because we had a fair hike, a good 40-minute hike through a forest to get to the vista, or the point from which you'd set up your tripod and get ready for sunrise.
Yep.
And sunrise was only maybe an hour, if we were lucky, away.
Right.
So we had to get everybody up, dressed, you know, gathered together, and then hike through. On this particular trip, there were various levels of fitness.
Right.
There was one lady who came with us, who was very fit. She was in her late 50s, but oh, she had the stride of a 20-year-old. She could just hike, this woman. She was amazing. And then there was, and she and I were the only people from Australia.
Right.
And the rest of the group were from the United States.
Wow.
And there was one, they were, you know, it was very interesting to, you know, mix the cultures. And this was also at the time of the Barack Obama election.
Yeah, and, yeah, sure.
So they were hanging out to find out, you know, under whose regime they were now going to live.
Mm-hmm.
And but there was one gentleman who was really struggling, not particularly fit. He was a chronic smoker. And he was really struggling. And on this particular morning, he hadn't slept well. He, you know, struggled with his gear. He had a hard time breathing. But we got up and we started hiking. Now, we hiked it. You know, we want to get to this location before that tip lights up and just glows orange in the morning sun.
Yep.
And I have wanted to photograph this scene in these conditions since I was a teenager.
Oh, wow.
So there's no way on God's green earth that I am going to miss this.
Yep.
But my job is also to make sure that everybody's there, everybody's safe, everybody's going to get the photograph. So while I want to get the photograph, my priority is to make sure that they actually get the photograph.
Yep.
Well, everybody marched on ahead, and Diego, our guide, our Argentinian guide, he took everybody, you know, just let's go and hiked them right up. But the gentleman of whom I'm speaking, who was not particularly fit, he was lagging well behind.
Right.
And I stayed with him. Now, I could see the sun coming up. I could see the darkness starting to lift and the blue of early morning starting to happen in the forest around me. And I thought, if I keep walking at this pace, I'm going to miss the whole sunrise. This is my once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
So I was torn between my duty to him, to stay with him, you know, help him with his gear, make sure he gets through the forest and finds his way.
Or just topping him and hiding the body.
the thought crossed my mind. And of course, the desire, my own desire to get this once-in-a-lifetime photo. Well, yeah. Duty won. I have a strong sense of duty, but duty won. And I'm staying with him. I'm saying, come on, mate, we can do it. No worries. You know, we'll get there. And I'm thinking, we better get there or I'll kill him. Diego has just taken the group and he's gone up ahead with all of the fitter ones.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm thinking, I'm never going to make it. I am never going to make it. And all of a sudden, I'm walking through the pass and who comes back but Diego. Now, Diego is a mountain goat. He's
probably
about 30 years old. He's just fit as a fiddle. He's the kind of guy who just runs up a mountain, you know.
Yep.
And so he came back and he said, you go ahead, Shelton, and take care of the group. Because he wasn't a photographer, he was just a guide.
Yep.
And I'll stay with, you know, the gentleman with whom I was, you know, with whom I was walking. Oh, man, I've never known such a godsend in all my life.
And so you've bolted like a mountain goat through the forest.
You betcha. Yeah, to the best of my mountain goat abilities. So I get up, I get through the forest, and then you have to climb up these gravel mounds, which are left over from the glaciers that have pushed through from there, these large sort of gravel mounds. And I'm climbing up, and it's two steps, up, one step back, and you're slipping, and I get to the top of this hill, and everybody's there calmly with their tripods, all ready to go. And I just died, you know, I just fell on the ground. I put my camera on the tripod, and I just fell on the ground going, and the Aussie lady said, oh, what's the matter, Shelton? You're not particularly fit, are you? I had bolted, and I had 25 pounds of camera gear on the back, and, you know, I hadn't slept that well. It was freezing cold. But we all got the photograph. Even the gentleman who was, you know, lagging behind turned up just in time
awesome.
To have his camera set up for, you know, that crest, that mountain peak just glowing orange. And
fantastic.
It was one of the most magical moments in my life, I have to admit.
Wow.
It's just incredible. But, you set yourself up, you go click, and then you're running from person to person. Hey, how you doing? You got this shot?
Yep.
Okay, have you metered? Have you made sure to meter for the, you know, the highlights on the mountain and la, la, la? And just making sure everybody's being taken care of, that's your job. But at the same time, no way on God's green earth I'm not going to take this photograph. You know?
Wow.
So Patagonia was fantastic, but it was arduous. Very packed physically.
Was it high altitude?
Yes, but it wasn't. It not too bad actually. Not too bad. The it wasn't sort of like low oxygen levels and that kind of thing.
Okay.
The mountains themselves, basically, we were photographing from you know, fairly average sort of above sea level kind of numbers, but the peaks themselves rise. But, you know, we were sort of at the lake.
A long way below that.
Yeah, a long way below that, you know, making sure that we got the photograph of the mountain rather than, you know, the mountain, than being on the mountain itself.
Yeah.
But the weather, you would head out for a hike during the day and the weather would change. You'd leave your camp and it would be sunny, and then wham, you'd be hit by, you know, 100-kilometer-hour winds. And then you'd be rained on, and then it would sleet or snow.
Jeez.
All in a period of maybe 6 hours of hiking, you'd get every conceivable kind of weather.
Wow!
And so you'd just basically leave all rugged up, and you'd get back soaking wet, and you know, it was physically. I got back from, because we went to a place called El Calafate.
Right.
And we stayed in a motel there, and then from there you drive to the Argentinian Patagonia, you come back to El Calafate, stay in a motel, and then you go to the Chilean Patagonia, or Cortes del Paine. Yeah, so we had one night break between the tenting, between the camping, in which we stayed in a good bed and had a shower and all in a motel. Well, I must admit, after the first stint of staying in down at Fitzroy and Cerro Torre, I came back and I had 5 cold sores on my bottom lip because I was so run down from, you know, not sleeping, running, you know, the workshops and the tour. And I was really, really run down. So I just climbed into bed. I had so much washing to do and all sorts of things, but I climbed into bed and slept like a baby because I really needed to get myself back together again for the next few days.
Wow.
So it was arduous, but I would not have changed a thing for the opportunity to photograph these.
That's the thing. I mean, you get yourself outside of your comfort zone, and you get to a place like that very few people get to photograph, and I guess that's the payoff.
Exactly. And to stand there and see this cold blue glacier lake in the early, without any sunlight on it, and this bluish gray mountainside, and then all of a sudden the peak the peak of this mountain, Cerro Torre, just looks like a knife blade as it goes up into the sky. And all of a sudden, you just see it go with this orange glow, you know, like a Star Wars lightsaber, you know. And you just, your jaw drops, and you see, you know, it just the tip at first, and then as the sun comes up, the orange glow moves across the rest of the peaks and down the mountainside. And you've just witnessed one of the most incredible things you've ever seen in your entire life. And you just photograph and photograph and photograph it. Just
awesome.
Incredible. Yeah.
Excellent.
So that's where I've been since the last episode of Shutter's Inc.
Fantastic.
It was, actually.
I'm going to have to cut this one short. I know that must be heartbreaking for our listeners who have been hanging out very loyally. I cannot thank you guys enough for the letters of support that we've had. But I do have other things I've got to get done this afternoon.
No worries.
Mate, it is so good to talk to you again.
You too.
And we've got to get on top of this technology issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that the phone is, you know, it's not unlistenable, but it's not quite as good a quality as Skype. So we've got to try and get that sorted again before next week.
And we will. We'll sort it out.
We will get to the bottom of it.
If not, we'll just do our best over the telephone until we do get it
absolutely
sorted out. But we don't want to miss out on any future issues of Shutter's Inc. And like you say, Bruce, I also thank everyone for just being so patient with us as we sorted a few personal and logistical issues out.
Absolutely.
You know? So
absolutely.
Thank you, everyone.
Yep.
But it's nice to be back, eh, mate?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. No, there's so much more to talk about. So.
You bet.
Yeah. Okay, mate. Well, good to talk to you. And
you too.
We will talk again next week.
You bet. Take care, mate.
You too. See ya.
See ya.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control-D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.